I came in March 2005, so a little bit over 5 years. I've just got my C visa. I took a year off to start with so I could learn German and then and see if I wanted to stay, and so then I stayed.
And you settled in smoothly and easily? Or
yeah, I mean,
did
it was...
Did you ever think, oh my God, I couldn't live here? Or...
No, I never thought that. The hardest thing for me was I didn't speak any German when I arrived. I could count to 10 and say hello and goodbye and stuff like that. And obviously it's possible to get by in English, especially in Bern, because it's so many embassies and the American Department of the University and blah, blah, blah. It's not like I'm living in a little village where no one speaks anything but Swiss German. And I do have friends who live here perfectly happy without speaking any German at all, or very, very little. I didn't want that. I thought if I'm going to live here, especially with a lot of our friends and my in-laws, they speak no English at all. And I thought, then I have to make the effort to learn German. So at the beginning it was hard because I was putting pressure on myself to integrate myself. But in terms of my quality of life, here is much better than it was in London. Yeah, there are things I miss, going to the theatre and stuff like that. But here, I can swim in the river. 10 minutes after work, I can be in the river in the summer, or an hour, I can be in the mountains.
Why did you decide to write this book?
I would love to say that I've been planning this ever since I moved to Switzerland, but I'd be lying. And now that I live in Switzerland, I never lie, of course. It was an accident, really. I hadn't done anything. I had done a couple bits of freelancing for my old magazine after I moved here. And then I stopped altogether. Then I fell into the job at Stauffacher. And then a couple of years ago, I started thinking, well, yeah, I've been here 3 years, I've got a job, I speak enough German, maybe I need to start thinking about something else longer term. And I went to the Geneva Writers Conference. And they have a whole weekend of workshops and lectures and creative writing stuff. And they have agents and publishers there for you to ask questions, or hopefully for you to get them to see your work or whatever. And my neighbour is a very active member. And she's American. And she persuaded me to go 2 years ago. I have to confess, I'm still not really into the write something and read it out in front of everyone school of creative writing. But I went along because I thought, well, what have I got to lose? It's a weekend and maybe I'll meet an agent, or maybe I'll just think. At that time I was thinking maybe I'll write a novel, because I had had 8 years of travel writing. And I thought, let's try a different form of writing. I know I can write, but let's maybe try something different. Maybe that'll stimulate me. So I signed up for all these creative writing workshops focusing on writing fiction, because that's something I knew nothing about. And more out of curiosity than anything, I also signed up for the travel writing workshop, just to see what they were going to say, and because I had 8 years of writing short articles, 3,000, 5,000 words, and I thought, well, a book is something totally different, so I went along. And the guy there, and his first little group exercise was, write about a culture clash that has affected you. And I thought, holy moly. I mean, I've seen, after 8 years, I've seen so much like dead bodies in the street and blah, blah, blah. But I thought, I actually don't want to write about those sort of things anymore. So I wrote about one of my first weeks in Switzerland, which was about 2 years before this workshop. It was Heidi Week at McDonald's. And that for me was, this is what Switzerland's about these days. It's using Heidi to sell an American corporate brand. So I wrote about that. And that passage has barely changed since I very first wrote it in that workshop. And then afterwards I thought, well, maybe I could do something with this. Maybe write about Swiss culture from a different point of view, beyond the stereotypes. So then I wrote a whole chapter, roughly the national identity chapter, that is now the final chapter of the book. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to be doing this in my free time, because I was still working, so I was still, evenings and weekends I was writing, I thought, I need to know this is going somewhere. Otherwise I'm going to spend a year in using all my free time to write something, and then what's it going to do, sit in a drawer? So I put together a proposal, about which I knew nothing, so I bought a book on how to write a non-fiction book proposal, put together a proposal with the sample chapter, and 2 days later I had an agent. I was very lucky.
Did you sit down and think, well, we need a chapter on cheese, need a chapter on trains?
The structure has changed. One of the things I discovered, that once you have an agent and a publisher, they want to change what you have in mind. The original idea of the book was, the idea that Heidi is a famous Swiss person and Roger Federer is a famous Swiss person, but beyond that, how, does anyone know any famous Swiss people? They may be famous, but they're not famous for being Swiss, like Carl Jung or Caesar Ritz. People don't know necessarily that they're Swiss. So the original idea of the book was to take famous Swiss people and find out about their lives while travelling around Switzerland. That didn't really work because the people just weren't famous enough. Who wants to read a whole chapter about Carl Jung if you're not interested in Jungian psychology or psychotherapy or whatever? So then I thought I need some what people know about Switzerland are the products. So cheese, chocolate, trains, watches. So the book became the book proposal that I sent off. I had already decided that before I talked to any agents. I thought it's not going to work as only famous people. It was alternating famous people and famous products. You had five of each. So it was Einstein and Tell and Heidi and cheese and chocolate and watches. And I would look at both to see what made up Switzerland's fame, as it were, Switzerland's reputation. The agent loved that idea. The publisher didn't. He didn't like, he loved the product bit, but he didn't like the people bit. He didn't think that people in the outside world were interested enough in Swiss people. So the publisher and I then had a very long meeting when we first talked about me signing the contract with him, what the book should look like. And he wanted very much that, and I was happy to go along with it because at that stage I hadn't written anything more than the Heidi chapter. He wanted very much it for it to be at the beginning an overall introduction to Switzerland, everything Swiss. So that's why the beginning now is geography, history, politics. Hopefully written in the same sort of style, light-hearted but with lots of facts, but not focusing on a particular product or person. And then the second half of the book, if you will, is more focusing on why Switzerland is more famous than Bulgaria, for instance. What it is about Switzerland that makes it in the outside world.
Who are you writing for?
I had three targets in mind, which I had to think about when I was writing this proposal. You have to think about the competition, which there is very little, which is why I decided to write this book. Because there's lots of books on Switzerland, but they tend to be either guidebooks, picture books, or books written by expats for expats, like the Ticking Along series, which I read when I first came here, and I didn't really understand because I didn't understand Switzerland and Swiss people. So the first market was for people like you and me, really, expats living here who want to know a little bit more about the country they're living in. So that was one market, obviously a finite market in many ways. There are still people who are going to move here and want to read about it, or who used to live here and know it well, but it's quite a small market. The biggest market is clearly travel literature, which is a genre in English, which it isn't in German in the same way. And so I'm obviously hoping that in Britain and America it will sell well for people who just want to read about a country they may never visit, in the same way that Bill Bryson sells really well. And a lot of them may never have been to Australia. And then obviously the third market, which I think is a bigger market than my publisher realizes, we had this interesting discussion at the beginning, is Swiss people themselves. Because a lot of Swiss people read in English, and they're very curious about what other people think of them, or think of their country. And certainly the way it's selling in the shop at the moment, a lot of Swiss people are buying it.
How would you describe the book?
It's wonderful.
What's your pitch?
Oh, God. My pitch is the real Switzerland behind the clichés. So everyone knows about Swiss chocolate and Heidi and Swiss clocks, but and everyone thinks they have an idea of the Swiss as being rather conservative and rather dull and humourless. And so I kind of hope it's an insider view of Switzerland, but written by someone who can have perspective. So notice all the little things which for me are interesting, like the 1,000-franc note or the red shoes or the opening times on Saturdays and Sundays. But for Swiss, that's just normal life, so they don't necessarily notice it. In the way that I loved Bill Bryson writing about Britain, because he'd lived there long enough to understand British people, but was still looking at it from an outsider's point of view.
It's funny, it's informative. It's not that critical. Is it not that critical because there's not that much to be critical about?
Or, I think...
Or it just didn't really fit into...
A bit of both. I mean, for me, there's not a lot to be critical about, and I've try to put in the bits I think are annoying rather than they're not horrendous, they're annoying, like the bureaucracy, all the red tape. That drives me nuts. And the sort of the exclusion of of foreigners and immigrants for 12 years. You'd have no rights for 12 years, essentially. So I think I put things in which I think as an outsider I view critically, but try not to make the criticism harsh, because I don't want to piss people off. I don't want this to be seen as a hatchet job. I don't want it to make headlines for being controversial and sort of ripping Switzerland apart, because I think a lot of things about Switzerland are really good. I think the popular democracy is a good idea, and the permanent coalition government is a good idea. It may be very slow, like everything in Switzerland is very slow, but it's just funny to see what's happening in Britain now. The coalition government is like everyone having a trauma about it, but David Cameron is saying we must open up the government more, we must make it more inclusive, you must have a say. It's more like how it is here, which I think is a great idea. I don't like I never liked the Labour versus Tory confrontation, but it has its faults. A lot to do with part of the society being quite xenophobic, as the Minaret vote showed, part of society being very conservative about some things, but then gay partnership law went through without a problem, and I was here for that vote, and I really thought it would get voted down. Even if it got a popular majority because of the cities, I didn't think you'd get half the cantons, because places like Schwyz and Obwalden and Uri are very conservative Catholic, and yet it sailed through.
And you do highlight the strange contradictions about being neutral but being a massive arms exporter.
Exactly, and I think those are the kind of things which, unless you live here, you don't know about Switzerland. I had no idea. Switzerland for me was just neutral. I had no idea that they make so much money from exporting death, basically. And just say, oh, well, it's different. That's economics and this is politics. But they're together. And they say, oh, of course, they're not used in war. But if you export weapons to Pakistan as your number one customer, those weapons are not being used. They're not sitting around in Islamabad in a warehouse. So it's really disingenuous, I think. And in some ways, that's one part of Switzerland that, yeah, it's nice in a way, they're so naive in some ways. In other ways, they're really disingenuous. It's like the whole stuff about Nazi gold, which I didn't go into depth on because it's been done in many books, but it just showed that, for me, the Swiss people, they do pigeonhole things in the same way they pigeonhole, well, this is my private life and this is my public life. So many of my Swiss friends never socialise with their work colleagues. It's completely separate. There's no Friday afternoon down the pub, Friday night down the pub, I should say, like you have in London. And I think that's reflected in society as well. They pigeonhole things in the same way that all the cantons have to be separate. And you have 26 different systems for things. And unless you live here, you never have any idea of that. Even as a tourist, I came as a tourist when I was travelling for Holiday Witch magazine. I was here for 3 weeks. You don't see that at all. And you don't notice that some cantons are Catholic and some are Protestant. You don't notice that some are very conservative and some are very liberal. You notice the language, and that's about the only division. But there are so many divisions in Swiss society, so many contradictions, like not having a coastline but winning the America's Cup. How did they do that? I mean, where did they learn to sail? On Lake Geneva. But so that's what fascinated me when I started.
No war memorials.
Yes, no war memorials. No, I mean, here we sell poppies in Stauffacher, and Swiss customers every year, what is that for? And I think, how can you live in the middle of Europe and not know what the poppy symbolises? But very few people here do.